back. It is Sunday night. Mr. Jones in the house.
What's going on, Tom? Tasty Nation? Let's get it rocking in here, okay? If you're, that's not the energy we need at the top of the show. This is a really, really big open, and I'm going to need you to bring it. How was New York City?
It was awesome.
Did you just raise the roof? How was the show?
The show was great. Everybody killed it.
New York City always comes out, baby.
Yeah, yeah. No, there was so many people. We were oversubscribed, but it was an awesome night. It was an awesome day, morning. I'm sorry. It was a long show, actually. It was almost 2 hours and 45 minutes, almost 3 hours. But we threw so much content at everybody. I think their heads were spinning by the end of it.
Oh, yeah. For a free show, they really get their money's worth out there. Webster Hall was nice. How was the venue? Good?
Venue's cool. Yeah. Old Very cool. and cool. But it was great. And I think that, you know, everybody really appreciated it. And it's off now to next stop, Seattle, and then London.
Oh, that'll be Seattle. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
London, you're going, is that your first international show?
No, we did one last year.
Oh, okay. I'm late.
We're doing London and Toronto this year. But I've done shows, you know, in your hometown of Singapore. I love to say that.
My hometown.
Yeah. I've done shows in all your hometowns, Omaha, Detroit, Singapore. We hope to be all over the place, you know, in the next couple of years.
All right. We got a good show. As always, do us a favor. Everybody watching on YouTube, hit the like button so we can spoof the Google algorithm and get a ton of people in here. I'm sure people are going to want to know not only your thoughts about the developments on Friday and over the weekend, Tom, but Pete and Ilya's thoughts as well.
So what do you
nasty
think,
little
Vic?
Sell-off on Friday. Don't do that. Don't ask me first. I'm going to ask you first.
Nasty little sell-off on Friday, 75 handles in the S&Ps. But then, you know, obviously some after the close, you know, you saw Bitcoin kind of sell off almost 8 or 10% on Saturday, then it rallied back. And yeah. I kind of don't think they're going to open down tonight. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's hard to say. They're pre-market here. They're not really showing us much at all. Maybe they're down a little bit. But I don't know. I mean, if they open down, do they stay down? If they open down, do they get ugly here? I don't see it. But Friday's move was ugly enough to take them lower on that alone.
Yeah, I agree. Weird price action altogether on Friday.
Really? Like was it overdue?
No, definitely overdue. I'm not talking about price action equities. I mean, what happened in metals, like the rally into
towards the end of the day,
and then there's creamed metals into the close.
Yeah, well, they squeezed everybody. I mean, they got the last short to cover, and then they just, you know, and then they just pulled
murdered them. But yeah, like as soon as the drone strike was announced by Iran, you saw the sell-off in Bitcoin once they said it was concluded, and that I think the U.S. response was, we'll handle this in a, you know, diplomatically going forward. That seemed to put a floor in Bitcoin, and it, you know, we rallied for the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, I tried to buy some ETH under 3,000 because I saw that it traded there on some exchange, but I couldn't get any.
What do you mean? Were you being stubborn?
No, I wasn't being stubborn.
You want the price or you want the asset, Thomas?
No. There wasn't. The markets were, they were kind of declaring a fast market. So the markets were crap.
Oh, I see.
And so nobody was honoring, you know, it's a Saturday. Who's going to buy? If you're a market maker, are you going to buy, what are you going to do buying Ether or Bitcoin on a Saturday in a crash? You know, so they weren't exactly, you know, they weren't exactly making very good markets on a Saturday. Mm-hmm. And that's multiple vendors. So, you know, people were writing me, they're like, hey, I'm getting traded through. Well, there is no, you know, it's a Saturday, it's a fast market. There's nothing we can do.
Wild week coming up, Tom. You know,
it's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's going to be very tradable.
Tail end of a, you know, World War III escalation threat. You got, I know you don't care about this one, but everybody and their mom from the Fed is talking this week. You got the earnings season, which kicked off at the end of last week. And you got some pretty decent economic reports.
Well, nobody cares. I know nobody cares about the Fed. The bonds bailed
that one.
Nobody cares about the Fed. The bonds bailed them out a little bit on Friday because that was a flight to quality. Mm-hmm. But I don't think And the first major earnings was kind of a little ugly with JP Morgan getting whacked.
Not just JP, Wells Fargo, Citi, all of them missed their NII numbers and everything
else. Yeah, I know, but the rest of those, like Wells Fargo was down pennies. And
that's true.
Hey, here, we opened, so the S&Ps opened up 5.
Drifting
and
higher.
And on Friday, if you had asked me on last night, we were flying home from New York. You know, we were arguing over, we were kind of not arguing, but we were debating on how much the S&Ps would open down tonight. Mm-hmm. Nobody took up. No, literally nobody took up. NASDAQ up 11, S&Ps up 7.
I made this joke on Friday because vol was up big. So, you know, everybody's sort of hedging early Friday, given the risks. And then you're at like 2:30 and the question in your mind is, you release the hedge for a rally on Monday, or do you keep the hedge on?
No,
you for potential can't, you downside. Can't
really. Well, that's the whole problem with hedging. That is the entire problem with hedging.
I'm not doing this with you right now.
No, I'm just telling you. That's why I freaking hate when people that don't understand this business talk about hedging, because there's no such thing as hedging, because you don't know when to lift your hedge. Like, there's no way you're going to buy volatility on Friday and then sell it out Friday afternoon because it's up a couple points. The whole reason you bought it was to protect you for over the weekend or next week. And then, you know, that's where you end up getting killed on it all the time. But that's the whole problem with hedging anything. There's no way to know when to take off your hedge. You just have to get totally lucky. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I see tonight, you know, bonds are down 17. So that hedge came off, you know, that flight to quality is off the table. And,
what's gold doing?
Gold tonight. It's up
nothing.
Gold and silver are basically unchanged. And I think this is the opening that surprised the hell out of everybody. I mean, crude oil is actually lower. You know, bonds down pretty big and S&P's up 10, NASDAQ up 35. I think the worst thing this market can, if you're a bull, you wanted a lower opening tonight. If you're a bear, you know, you actually want an up opening.
Yeah, I wanted a big relief rally into tomorrow. And then you get the slowing growth trade on that comes and runs everybody, that relief trade over.
Well, that's what I was hoping for. I mean, you're not going to go from a lower opening to lower prices on a Monday. Like, you're not getting, you know, it's not going to be a Black Monday type thing. So you weren't getting that. If you got a lower opening on Monday, I think buyers would have stepped in. Now that you got a higher opening on Sunday night, now you've got everybody confused, which is great. And now basically what this is saying is the geopolitical risk from the weekend is off the table. So now it gets back to, is the stock market priced fair? Mm-hmm. And, you know,
what do you think?
No,
to answer that question in your mind.
No, I think it's way too expensive still. On a relative basis, I think it's way too expensive. So I think that there's a lot of stock market risk here, just because it's expensive. I still think bonds are cheap, and you could probably buy this dip here or pretty close to it. But stock market, I wouldn't buy it with your money.
every sector was lower last week, Tom. Not the sectors I was hoping, though. Technology was only down 0.5% for the week, and they murdered materials. They came and found me.
Yeah.
XLB was down 3%. Healthcare was down like 3% too.
Technology will be the last to die. I thought at first technology would be the first to die, but technology is kind of like the 2024 flight to quality. So
they got so much money. They got so much cash. It's like a bond with a growth.
It's almost, you know what? There's some truth to that. It's almost like the too big to fail thing. As scary as it is, the technology stocks almost feel like they're too big to scale, but they're too big to fail, but there's some ugly, you know, there's some, a few ugly technology stocks that are getting, to the point where maybe they become interesting.
What do you, last earnings season, I know your study said something else, something different, that price was effectively 50-50 last earnings season. But if you just took the big liquid tradable names, it definitely felt like there was way more right tail upside risk.
Oh, God, with
Facebook and NVIDIA and all those things doing 20%, $200 billion a day.
There is no question that if you just looked at the pure numbers, it came out almost 50-50. But if you looked at the stocks that were higher, it was and significantly higher, and the outlier moves were in all the big names. And those are, you know, for traders, those, you know, you don't want your outlier moves in NVIDIA, because that's where you have positions, you know. And, you know, earnings last time was Well, last earnings was painful for me.
So what are you doing with binary events this season?
I haven't traded them yet.
Are you going to? Are you going to stay away from them?
I don't know. I mean, if volatility stays high, I'm trading them for sure. Mm. But if volatility, you know, if volatility caters here, then I have to think twice. The reason I think last earnings cycle was so bad was because volatility had cratered and we were selling stuff too cheap. Now volatility, you know, with Friday's pop, let's see, what's the VIX doing tonight?
17.
Now I'm looking for VIX futures. VX.
17.
Yeah, it's basically unchanged. With VIX up here at 17, earnings are a lot more interesting to me. Because now you're going to have some multiple of that 17 number. So you're going to have, it's way different than 13. You know, you get 20% more juice across the board. That's going to translate into probably, you know, almost 40% more juice in different, you know, equity underlyings. Mm. I think that's going to be, that's significant enough, you know, to play earnings this time, I think. Mm. Now, the first round, you know, JP Morgan outside the expected move. So, you know, clearly that didn't work.
The banks are never a great indication of earnings season.
No, I understand
that. March to their own drum. But Monday, Goldman Sachs and Charles Schwab. Tuesday, Bank of America, United Health, Johnson & Johnson, Morgan Stanley. Then after the close, you got United. Interactive Brokers report after the close as well. Wednesday, you got Travelers Insurance, U.S. Bank, Alcoa after the close, Las Vegas Sands, CSX, and Discover Financial, DFS. And then Taiwan Semiconductor on Thursday. That'll be an interesting one.
It'll be interesting, but it's a really hard stock to trade. Like,
what do you mean? Just liquidity wise or what?
It feels like it's been outside the expected range on every single earnings. Like, for some reason, they keep the markets in there very narrow. Like, they just don't give it any respect.
You think so? You're just saying, generally speaking, is overpriced relative to realize, and your personal experience is that you don't get paid in implied vol relative to the realized vol in this stock.
I feel like in Taiwan Semiconductor, the implied vol is too cheap relative to realized. You know, like, if you don't think you've got some really big edge, you can't do it. Like, I mean, no, you don't know what the edge is. You just think it is. And Taiwan Semiconductor is one of those stocks where it's been, you know, it's just been hard. That's all I can say. I mean, I've traded at every earnings cycle. I don't think we made any money.
Fair enough. Good insight, my friend. That's what the people are paying for here in this free stream. Thursday after the close, Netflix, Intuitive Surgical, ISRG. And then Friday, we're still in the part of the early in the early earnings season. You still get some Friday morning reports. So American Express, Procter Gamble, Schlumberger, and Regent Financial, and a handful of others. So it's a pretty decent week. No big crazy tech names with big juicy vols. Most of these expected moves are like 4 to 6%.
You have to realize that there's an overriding market issue right now. Mm-hmm. You know, where the market showed that it's got some vulnerability on Friday, and it also showed that it has some volatility on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of last week. So earnings will not play nearly as important a role. They won't play nearly as impactful a role if the market is truly, you know, if the market gets really, you know, volatile. I mean, none of those companies. None of those companies will move the market much. I mean, will Goldman Sachs move the market on Tuesday? Probably not, you know, or move the financial stocks? Probably not. And I don't think there's a lot of other stuff that this next week, except for Netflix, that anybody like. That's the only stock that's at a different level, market cap wise, than anything else.
All right.
Ready for a little Pete moment?
I am.
Let's I was with it. Pete this weekend.
Was in NYC too.
Oh, Pete was one of the closing acts.
I heard he was an absolute animal after the show. Like, he's the nightlife guy.
Oh, you know? All night. I mean, I tell you, you know, the Moxie Hotel is spectacular. And the best part of the thing was, you know, they had an all night Taylor dance-a-thon starting at 11 o'clock with the classic Until. So it's just basically JJ and I made it. We got up there about 11:30 after a power nap, and we just rolled straight out from the Taylor dance-a-thon right across the street over to the Webster. So it was perfect. I mean, I was ready to go. You know what? I think there were about 600 people in the audience. At that point, I was seeing three times everything. So it was almost 2,000 people there I was speaking to. I mean, a lot of them looked the same, but it was really good. So
they told me you had a blue polyester suit with some white platform shoes on, and you were stepping like John Travolta in Saturday Night Fever. That's what I heard.
He was out there. The arm, the hand, and everything. Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to ask you, what did you think about Friday's market action and the events that transpired over the weekend? What does it mean for risk in your mind?
Yeah, you know what? It was a classic gold going further and farther than we thought, and just that brutal sell-off that was well overdue. You know, well overdue. We were down almost $100 range in gold. Really, the range was in silver. We had a buck and a half range in silver. Think about that. You know, gold put in lifetime highs on Friday at 24.50 in the futures. Silver got up to $30. That's half of its lifetime high, which is, I think, around 56 or 57. So tremendous amount of volatility in both these things right now. I wouldn't be surprised if we see gold start to, and it's already starting to bounce a little bit now. We see a little bit of bounce into that, just on the other shoe to fall, whether or not we see gold was up. We're up like from the close, I don't know, $6-7 right now. We were up $150 Friday on the way, or Saturday on the way home, looking at some of the overnight, the over the weekend cash markets, obviously incredibly thin. When crypto was putting in its lows, gold was at its highs. So I think we're going to see a little bit of bounce back in gold, a little bit of bounce back in silver.
Yeah, I'm going to caution people, Pete, not to get too, don't look at some of those prints from the weekend, and because those prints were not tradable.
They're all made on $1,000 a notional. So
those prints are not tradable. Like I had to write
agreed
to people over the weekend and explain when OTC, like Saturday exchanges, declare a fast market, no order is protected.
Right.
So like if you have a limit order in to buy, you know, to sell gold, let's say at 2,500 and it trades there, you're never getting filled.
Well, and the only reflection. Right. The only reflection of it was Pax Gold. And there you can only buy it. You can't sell it. So
yeah, used to support that product in the we used to support the tokenized Pax Gold.
Right.
And I really liked it, but the regulators made us stop supporting it. That was cold. The SEC said we can't offer tokenized gold because we can't. Right. they actually don't give you a reason. They say here's our advice to you. We would suggest that you don't offer tokenized gold.
Right.
If you want to continue to offer it, you just be prepared for the consequences.
I was going to say, I've had those conversations before with the regulator. We suggest you don't do it. If you force our hand and write a reason why, that's up to you. But I suggest you don't force our hand. So you leave it at that and move on. So
it's not worth $1 million fine to make $10.
And no, absolutely not. And every fine now comes with seven digits attached to it, no matter what you're doing. Dollar had a good rally up. I think this is an interesting spot if you want to be short dollars, which I kind of do. I think euro is down, you know, at 106.5. We know the yen's cheap, but they really beat up Aussie too. So
yeah, well, Aussie's higher this morning. Tonight. Aussie's higher. British pound's higher. You know, the
euro's flat. Higher. Euro's flat, and the yen still can't get out of its way. You know, it's yen wrapped around 153 in spot. It's just, I mean, we're down to. I mean, the daily ranges here are 12, 14, 15 basis points. There's nothing to do. So as much as the extreme is there, and the extreme is there, and I think Ilya was trading this in a good way too, trading some of the pairs, buying yen and selling some things against it is an interesting trade. But the focus has to stick where the market's really moving, and that's in equities.
Totally. I 100% agree.
And I think you would have, we all would have expected equities to open lower. The fact that this feels so much like it did after both PPI and the other thing, they beat them down pretty continuously the previous day, and it seems like they could put the bid in even at these elevated levels. so much easier than they can than when they take it out.
It's so funny, Pete, you mentioned that, because when we were coming home from the show on Saturday night, I was sitting next to a guy that works for the CME, and he's an ex-floor trader, and we were sitting there talking about, and the whole conversation we had about Sunday night was, how low do you think they're going to open?
Yeah, right.
And right. He's been trading for like 30 years, you know, like right. I've been doing this for 40 years, and we're sitting there, how low are they going to open? And of course they open higher. That's why I just want to say, nobody knows anything ever, no matter what.
No. And I couldn't agree with you more. I think what we finally saw in gold, and this will be interesting to see, I still think we're probably going to go back and challenge a little bit to the upside, but I think maybe there is a two-way component in that. The bounce back in gold is, and it holding on the upper end of its range, far more than silver. I mean, the silver damage done was almost 7% from high to low. That's a lot of...
Yeah. Crazy.
I mean, that's nat gas type of movement in a day. We haven't seen that in silver in a long time. So interesting divergence shake. Copper's up almost 90 cents while silver's lower. So the breakdown between the base.
See that. And
huge.
Yeah.
Copper's been tough
Who
lately.
Says I mean, that? Who says I hate copper? What do you mean I hate copper?
I have a short strangle.
I was going to say, when you have strangles on it, copper is... can be that climbing, unforgiving piece. So it works, but it can be unforgiving. Victor, you made a great point. I mean, I look through earnings, and we've got, you know, Goldman tomorrow morning, Bank of America, not interesting. Morgan Stanley, not that interesting. I mean, UAL, kind of interesting in terms of IV rank. It's such a small notional, though, such a small price underlying. You're only looking at a $3 move. Netflix is really the only interesting thing.
It's 8%, though, and that's the, like, of all the ones I looked at, that was one of the juiciest.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm gonna tell you guys a story, because it's a true story, and I've told it before on air, but I have to tell you. 1992. Maybe, I think it's 92. I don't remember. Desert Storm, whenever that was. So there's a kid. I don't remember his name, but there was a kid. He clerked for the broker that stood next to me in the pit. I was a market maker. There was a broker next to me. There was a broker next to him, whatever. We all hung around the brokers. There was a kid who was clerking for the broker for like a couple of years. So we all became friends. Kid always wanted to be a cameraman. Like, that was his goal. He went to school to be a cameraman. He was just working at the exchange. He finally got offered a job from CNN. And his first thing was, they shipped him off to Iraq. to film because they thought there was going to be something there, and the new kid goes to the front line type thing. So this kid, and remember, this is before there's cell phones, basically, he's on the front lines, Desert Storm, we're about to go to war that night. He calls into the OEX pit and he tells everybody, okay, we're going tonight's the war. Everybody's like, and now they're probably reporting the same thing on CNN, but we don't watch anything else or whatever. So, I mean, if we knew, everybody knew. So Everybody's falling over each other to buy puts, right? Everybody's scrambling to buy puts. So I got a couple hundred puts. You know, they were crappy, but I got a couple hundred puts. The broker next to me, as we're closing that day, sticks me with a 50 lot of calls because he couldn't find a bid. Nobody would make him a bid for the calls. So he stuck him with me because he had to give the customer a fill. I mean, he gave it to me at a good price, but he stuck with me. I couldn't even hedge him because we were shut. We were closed. The next morning, we open up limit. All those puts I bought go out worthless. Everybody in the whole pit is everybody's positions are worthless. Right. And I got this 50 lot of calls, which opened up like $30. It was the most insane. Like I thought that 50 lot of calls was going to be, you know, a max loser. Because that night on CNN, you could watch the war, everything we thought.
The bombs, missiles, the
stuff. Yeah, and remember, they don't open at night then. The S&Ps didn't open at night. So I was debating whether they were going to open down 100, 50, 100, 150, and they opened up lock limit higher.
Yeah.
So there's no freaking way that anybody knows anything ever.
Agreed.
And I'm sticking with that.
Agreed. And you know, I honestly, it'll be interesting to see how we I mean, it's thin now. If we hold on, it feels like it's going to be one of those air rallies where we rally Sunday night a little bit, and then the bid comes in Monday. Maybe that's the setup to sell. That's what I said, Pete.
I totally think that is the case.
Pete, 10 years at 4.5%. This is my favorite game to play. Do you see 4 before 5 or 5 before 4?
Oh, that's a great question, Vic. You know, they've marked it. You know, just being that we had 7 rate hikes or rate cuts priced in the early part of the year. We're down to 2.5 rate cuts. I honestly think, you know,
First of all, if the
aversion doesn't come out of the market, he's not going to let me answer.
Don't give him credit for that. That's not a great question. He has no idea. Like, you're asking him a question like, what does Pete Momet know? He doesn't know any more than you know or I know. Like, what kind of great question is that? Who knows? Who cares?
Hold on. Okay. First of all, I think normally I sit here and this is your show, your dime, your dance, and I let you do your little thing. But my friend, do you realize there's 1,000 people here and they come to hear opinions? And I thought you got some people from Tasty Trade to come on and give their opinions. And guess what? I'm guessing a lot more people want to hear Pete's opinion. Hold on. I'm guessing a lot more people want to hear Pete's opinion on bonds than yours. Because the who cares? The who cares?
All right, Pete, then give your damn opinion. Don't hedge yourself.
My opinion versus his. But honestly, I think if the inversion stays in place, we probably see 5% before we see 4. That is my thought, is that we're going to continue to drift a little bit higher in rates. But I don't think that's going to be an interesting trade right now.
What do you mean? Sideways for a while? Do you think 4.5 is a magnet?
I think sideways until, I mean, we need something material. I mean, if you just go by the Chucklehead talk last week, they were marking out rate cuts like no tomorrow. And you saw that come out in terms of the probabilities of a June cut. I think June cut fell to less than 30% chance. So they were trying to backpedal really quickly. They don't know either. So when you see something come down from 7 to 2.5, you got to think maybe now they're a little overly pessimistic as to how often they will cut. But this, if 2s 10s stay where they are and we continue to see it steepen, I probably think, well, 5's a stretch, we stay on top of 4.5.
Pete, can you stick around after the show? I got a feeling I'm gonna get a talking to.
He is physically cringing right now at this.
No, I'm not. I'm not. You just got me to buy 15s in the notes because okay, I couldn't. This is too perfect. I just bought 15s. I'm trying to buy more at 14.5, but it's 15.5. It just got bid. So I'm going to buy a bunch of notes tonight if they trade down to, you know, 15, 14.5. Yeah.
He's using the copper indicator. So, if he hates them, I got to buy some here. It's cheap. So
yes,
we'll see. We'll see. Yep. That's what makes for great opportunity here. I think, you know what, Victor, until some of the inner relationships change there, I think it's going to be a tougher trade. I think there's going to be more interest. I mean, metals are giving us really interesting. I mean, it's uncomfortable because we are blowing through ranges like we haven't done in a long time. When you think about, you know, $2 range in silver in the matter of 24 hours, I mean, we haven't done that in a long time. And what's interesting is we're seeing that in gold. We're seeing that in silver. Crude did get above 87, didn't stay there for long. No interest in the dollar, though. Yes, the dollar's higher, but not by much. I mean, euro was down 30, 40 points. No FX vol yet, which surprises me a little bit because I would have thought we would have either tried to trade above 110 in euro or back down below 103. So I'm not going to, you know, force my ideas in FX right now. The yen is cheap. We've said that for 1.5 years now, and it really hasn't done us much good.
You took me down in the end. That's all.
Again, okay.
Now, you took me down. You took me down in the 80s. It's in the 60s now.
I was going to say that goes back 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. I've been longer for 2.5 years.
Right. Thank you so much. I believe you did have a 100-point rally you could have sold, but no. you were looking for the home run, not the 100-point rally, but fair enough.
All right, Pete, we got to move on to Ilya. He's chomping at the bit here. Or I'm sorry.
You bet, guys, go get him.
Champing at the bit.
I'll talk to you.
Thanks, Pete.
Bye.
Pete did a great job in New York. His segment was wonderful. Champing
it. Awesome.
Ilya Spivak, what's going on, Ilya?
What's going on, gentlemen?
Well, Pete got me to buy some notes at 108.15.
I actually think you're right. I think.
By the way, this is going to blow his mind. I'm also long.
I just needed. Now I wasn't going to buy him tonight. I just needed confirmation from Pete.
Now I'm selling him. I got to be selling him right now. All right, I'm selling the 14.5.
Well, I'm 14.5 bid. So you can sell him to me because I'm 14.5 bid right now.
We're all going to be wrong. Watch.
Sure.
So here's how it's going to happen, right? So I was tweeting on Friday saying I would not be surprised at all if they opened them higher on Monday, because the geopolitical story made no sense to me on Friday. If we had a geopolitical risk situation that was real and the market was legitimately concerned about it, as opposed to just making an excuse to take down risk, then gold would be up, crude oil would be up, the Canadian dollar would not be getting smoked, the Norwegian krone would not be getting smoked. The dollar and the yen ran against both of the oil currencies. Oil closed down, gold closed down. This is not a Middle East story. That doesn't add up. And so my thinking was the market didn't really have a sell-off on geopolitics, but once the geopolitics settled over the weekend, they'd go, oh, good, open up, and then get run over on Monday later. I suspect we're kind of on our way there.
You'd be happy to know I got my 14.5s. Pete must have sold them to me.
It was weird. It was almost like it was such a managed conflict on Saturday, you know?
That's why,
you
know, it's like that's why
the drones are coming. We shot down all the drones, or we shot down 90%
of
them.
You guys, that's why all these discussions are so, like, they're so secondary to me. They have no, you know,
But that's only if you take them at face value.
Exactly.
If you look at what happened.
I'm over here so conspiracy theorist. I'm like, you know what? This is all just a distraction because they're passing that FISA Section 702 bill and they don't want people paying attention to the fact that the NSA is going to have 2 more years to look on our phones and all of our Amazon devices. Like that's where I'm at with this.
Of course, it's what we said on your show on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Right. It's a very simple kind of calculus. The market topped on the 21st of March. It has not set a higher high since the 21st of March. The Fed met on the 20th. By the 18th, the market was already saying you guys are not going to do 3 cuts, which is the official Fed forecast.
I wish they would. Who cares? You know what? Let them cut. All you people that want to see them cut, let them cut. See what the back end of the curve does.
But that's not even the point.
See what the long end of the curve does.
It
takes away the printer from all of you savages who think the Fed funds rate is the only damn thing that matters and not the long-term cost of capital in the back end of that curve. Go ahead. Let them cut in June.
But that is the baseline for the cost of capital. That's the floor that moves it up or down. And when you got the Fed finally on the dovish side of markets, as opposed to the other way around, it's a very simple thing. People go, you know what? I'm okay taking risk if the money in the future is going to be cheaper, because if I lose, so what? I'll borrow it back. I'll go again. But if the money is going to be more expensive in the future, then I'm going to be a little bit more cautious. And the tailwind to risk goes away. The moment the Fed goes, yeah, we're at 3, and the market is less than that, it stops. It hasn't made a higher high since.
So what do you
do here?
What's the whole thing. What's important to you? Is it the tail end of the geopolitical fallout over the last couple of days? Is it all the Fed squawk? Is it the earnings? Is it the economic data? Or is it just price
something
action? What's important to you this week?
I think something broke on Friday. I think when we looked at it on Friday, the most eye-catching thing for me was the bonds were going up, the yen was going up, the dollar was going up altogether as stocks were going down. That was risk aversion classic. It had nothing to do with the bonds going up or down for Fed-related reasons. You'll notice the front end didn't go anywhere, really. The big moves were at the long end, and it was safety demand going into long end government debt, the same way that it was going to liquidity in the dollar, in the yen, and the same sort of inversely of stocks coming down. I think we've hit something of a point here where a wave of risk aversion is afoot. I think the bias now is risk off. And so I'm not sure earnings matter very much. I don't think that there's really any huge data. I mean, retail sales is out on Monday. On Friday, the consumer confidence numbers were soggy because inflation expectations ticked up a little. And that's been kind of the barometer for where the consumer is. That might be interesting. But I don't really see anything on the data front that's aggressively jumping out at me, except maybe Japanese inflation later in the week, because they could maybe the market looks at this, starts moving the yen a little, and the BOJ only intervenes when the market is only going their way. They don't like to fight it. They
Tom,
like
what do you think about the going. What do you think about the Japanese inflation print coming out this week?
I'm torn as to whether to say something or not say something.
Say it. We live in a First Amendment country for a reason. Say it.
No, because I what drives me crazy is when we have conversations about things that are not actionable.
Mm-hmm.
Like what Pete Molmat is doing is actually actionable because we can fade him or go along with him. But what Ilya just said is not actionable, because I don't even know if you told me in advance what the Japanese economic numbers were, I wouldn't even know what to do.
Oh, I don't think you trade it that way at all. I don't think knowing
I have no idea what you're trying to say with that kind of stuff. Like, I don't even know what that means.
So tie it into yields, and then tie it into yen, and then tie it into the reverse carry trade.
I can very easily tell you what you're looking
Okay, for. Well, dumb it down
you
for me.
You just had 6J futures go to levels that you haven't seen in decades.
Okay, I have 6J futures on. I'm basically
right.
Short, so, deep in the money puts.
Right. So for me, if Japanese inflation surprises on the upside,
okay,
markets go, okay, they might hike. They might go again. The okay. yen starts moving higher. If the yen starts moving higher, that's the moment where Japanese authorities, typically, because they don't like fighting the market, they like to help the market go where it's already going, especially when it's going their way. And so they look at this and they go, okay, if ever there was a time to intervene and lean in and really get the market far, that's it. So
I don't really understand it. I still don't understand it.
It pushes the yen higher hard.
Yeah, I got that, because but the whole thing, you know, like the reason the Japanese have let the yen go in the crapper, and the reason that I'm long it is strictly for pot odds. But if you want to know why the Japanese have let the yen go basically down to nothing, it's because their stock market has gone to record highs in the process. So so you know, I mean, it's simple. Make the money cheap and everybody will buy our stuff. And that's it. You know, I mean, that's the story. Otherwise, they couldn't have intervened a long time ago and pushed it higher. It's all
they're not successful intervening when
I know, but it's a manipulated market. The reality okay. is it's a manipulated market. So I that's why I'm saying it doesn't matter. You know,
how we always get stuck at the yen.
I don't want to talk about Sunday. The yen. I know,
but to me, it's all the same thing. So for me, yeah. being long the dollar, the yen, the bonds, and short stocks is the same idea. It's the idea that risk sentiment has turned a corner.
Mm. Fair enough.
Essentially, we are now in a risk-off market. So
let's make.
I have my put spread in SPY. I have my put spread in the Qs. That's working. I'm very long dollars. That's working. I haven't put the yen back on, and I haven't put the bonds on at the long end yet. I have them at the front end. If they come on here, and we start to get a little bit more risk aversion, to your question about, the 10-year, 4 first or 5, I think 4. Because I think the bonds go higher because risk aversion. Then I just need a little bit more confirmation that it's turned, and then I'm probably buying call spreads.
So then what's your view on gold?
Gold, I think people really misunderstand what gold is doing here.
Okay.
Because if you are a traditional watcher of gold, then you know that gold tends to be a foil for fiat money, so the dollar, and a foil for real rates. So the fact that gold, because of course gold yields nothing. So if real rates are negative, it makes sense to have a store of value that yields zero. And if real rates are positive and going higher, it makes no sense at all. So that's gold's kind of usual thing. And then if it's some sort of a geopolitical something, it can reflexively jump for a bit. What you've seen in gold really since March has been completely disconnected from anything. Not only that, but GLD holdings, GLD ETF holdings are at a 5-year low. Mm-hmm. This is not about the usual catalysts of gold. This is about the fact that China's central bank gold reserves are growing at 11% year on year, mm-hmm. which is nuts.
I have a different reason why all these assets are going up. And it's just, all we're doing is playing a sector rotation, and anything that's liquid gets bought. It's just, there is so much capital out there looking for homes in a listed liquid marketplace and people are starting to understand that you need to be pretty well diversified to have an actually non-correlated portfolio. That the reason that gold and silver are going up is the same reason that people buy Bitcoin, is the same reason. I mean, one is the technology play, one is a precious metal play, but it doesn't matter what you buy. It only matters that you put capital to use. And nothing, you can make up as many, you can make up as many stories as you want for all the reasons why gold's higher. The only real reason is there is just too much capital and too much liquidity, and it's finding a home wherever you can create enough liquidity and enough of, let's call it a trend or whatever else, where you can force it higher. Remember, commodities don't have natural sellers. So they're like animals without predators. Mm. There's no natural predator. So the reason that commodities go higher, and the reason that commodities act differently than stocks, is because at some point, stocks attract natural sellers. Longs decide to get out and take profits. But there are no such thing as natural longs in most commodities. Of course, there are people that own the underlying blah, 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 but there's not really natural sellers anywhere along the way. Traders sell, investors are passive, don't sell, or hedgers don't sell. So you end up in a situation where commodities are just, they are without predator, and therefore they go higher. And when you have so much liquidity, still, if you suck liquidity out of the system, all these assets are going to get killed. It'll start with stocks first, and right now it's going from stocks to different hard assets, but eventually it'll go from stocks back into cash if you start to suck the liquidity out of the marketplace.
So I agree with a lot of that.
And that's the reason also that the Fed can't run the risk of going. That's also the reason that the Fed can't run the risk of talking about a rate increase and everything else. That's the whole reason that everybody has to be on the same bandwagon here and talking the same book and the same story. Now bonds might say something different, but that is the reason, because if the narrative changes, then that is, that's dangerous for everybody, because then people go and turn around and sell assets. As long as the narrative doesn't change, it's just a cyclical market. That's all it is.
I think increased liquidity,
for me, gold is a little bit
beta,
different than other commodities.
Alpha.
Hold on, you're both talking at the same time. What'd you say?
Go ahead, Ilya. Go ahead, Ilya.
No, I agree with almost all of that. The only thing that I would say is, to me, gold is different from other commodities because gold is primarily an investment vehicle,
and money.
Physical demand
it's
is
capital.
Secondary, yeah. As opposed to, let's say, a copper or even a silver, which has industrial use. And yeah, I mean, people are generally either long or not in. There's not a natural set of predators going actively shorting, unless it's a big liquidation and people are very negative on global growth, and then there's opportunistic vulture types.
Sure.
So right, what's your guys' biases leaning into the week? Ilya, you can go first. I'll go second. Tom, you take us home. Ilya? Okay.
Risk off. I'm holding short SPY, short the Qs. I'm long dollars. I've added being short Canadian dollar to that mix. I'm also short euros and pounds. I want to be short Aussie, but I'm waiting to kind of get the price I want. And just looking to add if I get opportunities and looking to buy the long end if I get confirmation. At this point, I think risk off. For a while.
I reduced deltas, but I'm not net short yet. I would really like to see a Monday rally before getting short. I think I want to play this week short. I think it might be a weak time for metals. And I would like to see if gold does actually come in this week. What does that mean for China and Chinese stocks? I listened to a guy named Luke Groman, who had a really, really interesting podcast. He talked about the relationship between the yuan, gold, Chinese central bank, which Ilya spoke to, and the interrelationship of all that. So I'd really like to see what would happen to Chinese stocks in a down gold week. But I don't have a ton of huge, bets on. I took a lot of exposure off last week. Tom, what do you think?
Like Ilya, I am short deltas. I'm actually, this is the first time I have, because of the pop and volley, I actually have more theta than short delta. But my short delta theta position is pretty big. First time we're up over like significant numbers in a long time. That's because of the pop and vol. So I'm short delta. Short, I'm mostly short S&Ps and NASDAQ. And I am long some Russell. I do have that Russell S&P trade on. I'm like Ilya. I am also long bonds. I'm long bonds and notes. I know he's not there yet, but leaning the same way as him. So I'm long bonds and notes. The only thing I kind of differ from is that I am short the US dollar, not long it. And I'm short the dollar versus the Aussie, dollar versus the euro, dollar versus the Japanese yen, dollar versus the British pound. Not big. They're all kind of small positions. I'm short premium in gold. I'm short premium in crude oil. And I'm short premium in some of the wheats. In some of the softs, none of that has worked yet. And in the stock market, you know, I mean, my two biggest equity shorts are NVIDIA and Microsoft, and they have not come in yet.
Those things are islands.
Yeah, they are islands. And I do have longs, though. I'm long Apple. I'm long a little bit of Tesla. And I'm long Intel. So I have three dogs.
I don't have Intel. I'm long Apple, Google, Tesla.
Yeah, they're kind of like, you know, I'm buying the dogs here, the things that are beaten down, but only as a little bit of long delta hedge. And tonight, let's see, we're up 15.75 and the NASDAQ's up 44.
Keep rallying them, baby. Let's let everybody feel good that the worst is behind us.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Safe to get back in the water. All right, boys. That was great stuff tonight. Have a good night.
All right. Peace.
Gentlemen.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducing